Welcome to the Better and Longer podcast. My name is Justin Moore, President and CEO at the Area Office on Aging. Today, we have a very special guest, honored to have with us here today, Bishop Daniel Thomas of the Diocese of Toledo. I am eternally grateful to this man for ordaining me as a deacon about 7 years ago. Welcome to the Better and Longer podcast, Bishop Thomas.
Justin, thank you so much, and delighted to be with your viewers and listeners, and glad to engage on this very, very important topic for society and for us as a church.
That's right. So today we're focusing on aging through the lens of faith. When you maybe let's start off a little bit about just how maybe your childhood growing up, what was that experience of faith like? And just to set the backdrop for our viewers a little bit on mine, I'll share first and then ask you to share.
Sure.
So growing up, my great-grandfather, I remember very distinctly his 100th birthday. And my dad rented one of those big spotlights you see in the sky and had a big banner out by the road saying, "Happy 100th birthday, Poppy," which was his beloved nickname that we called him. And people would be honking and he'd be waving as people went by. And he lived to be 104 years old up until the last year of his life. He lived in his own home, mowed his own grass, drove his own car, cooked his own food, so on and so forth. And even an eye doctor that did cataract surgery on him loved his last name, Goodsight. And he started some local television commercials growing up. So I remember as a young kid, we'd have a TV at the breakfast table. I'd be eating breakfast, and my grandpa would come on TV and just walking out to the school bus with a great sense of, you know, being impressed that he's my grandpa. I admired his longevity. I admired his independence. So for me, aging was something that was celebrated growing up. His daughter, my grandmother, I remember just talking about how she wanted to live to be 100. So this aspirational goal of living longer was something that was really ingrained in me and the like, and my heart was formed for the work that we do at the Area Office on Aging at a very young age. So that's a little bit about kind of my experience growing up dealing with this topic of aging and being around older adults and how it's kind of influenced my view on this subject. It was beautiful, and I want to share that beauty with others. So can you share a little bit about your experience growing up?
Sure. What a rich background for your present work. Yeah. And I had the advantage of having my paternal grandparents for a good long while. Sadly, my maternal grandparents both passed away by the time I was 1 year old. Wow. So I did not have the gift of knowing them well, but I knew them through memory. And I think that's something that's very important as well. It was the formation that my parents gave my brother and me. And in that formation, you know, it was always a profound respect for human life. And that extended from the womb to the tomb, so to speak. And that obviously included the elderly. And I happened to have a cousin on each side of my family, one who was mentally challenged. At that time, you would have said handicapped, so mentally disabled. And we had a great and deep love for him, and he lived longer than most would have expected. And then we also had on the other side of the family a very, very seriously disabled and bedridden cousin who was cared for beautifully by his family, who lived into old age. And after, of course, my own parents and their aging was something that I learned from deeply. And then my dad's aunt, my great aunt, interestingly, lived to 103. Wow. And she was in her own home, I think, through 99 years old, getting up on the dining room table and cleaning the chandelier. And she was a fireball and just filled with spirit and life. And I recall very, very vividly my last visit with her, and then I was able, by God's grace, to offer her funeral mass. In my last visit with her, I took her to the sunroom of the nursing home where she was, and she, you know, reiterated to me that at this age, all of her children, all her grandchildren, all her friends, everyone was gone. And she said she wondered why the Lord was keeping her going. And I said, "It's because of your good spirit and you have a lot more to pray for." And then she looked at her hands, which were absolutely, you know, deformed from severe arthritis. So literally all her fingers, and many of us have seen this with arthritic patients, were all, if you will, twisted in the same direction. And with great good humor and absolute self-deprecatory sense, she said, "Now look at this." She says, "If somebody asks directions, I can't even point anymore because they're all pointed in the same direction." But it was that kind of joy that also showed me that she had never lost, you know, the interior joy which comes from grace. Mm. Yeah.
So that's a beautiful story. One of the things that strikes me about it is that there's different people who maybe emphasize different aspects of aging in different ways. Some might focus more on the negatives or what they cannot do physically, maybe mm-hmm. that previously they could. And others might focus a little bit more on the positives associated with aging. One of the things, there's a study that was done that focused on how people respond to five questions about aging and how those answer more positively on their view of aging, it actually extends their life by 7.5 years compared to those that have negative views on aging. Talk a little bit about how you view aging. Do you view it more as a positive, more as a negative, and what's kind of shaped that view?
Yeah, I don't. I think it's not. I'm not sure of the category actually, Justin, but I would say any life is positive. So any human life is positive. Therefore, we always have to please God, see the positive. You know, there's a great phrase attributed to St. Augustine who says, entrust the past to God's mercy, the future to God's providence, and the present to God's love. And, you know, I've repeated that over and over again, especially for folks who are older. And I've had the blessing of speaking at least 2 times to different groups from our own parishes in the diocese of older parishioners who gather together, and they're there for continuing formation, which is a beautiful thing in their Catholic faith. So I would simply say I see it as a positive, and no matter the physical challenges, and I look to my own parents in that as they aged and as they encountered serious illnesses and physical challenges, they remained positive and encouraging, even to the point where after my mother had a massive stroke and was completely paralyzed on one side of her body, here I was weeping one night at the hospital, sitting by her bedside, and here she was consoling me, asking me why I was crying. Mm-hmm. So it's that kind of reality in my experience that this is life, and that life is to be honored and respected. I do want to point out for the listeners, and viewers, I might be able to get to it at another point of some of these questions, but just to point out for themselves, I think a very rich document that might be valuable for this mm-hmm. conversation. And folks, I just gave a copy to Justin.
Yes, thank you.
So this is a document that I was very familiar with, and because of my having lived and worked in Rome for 15 years at the Vatican, the Holy Father at that time, Saint John Paul II, he published a letter, and it was a letter to the elderly. And he was writing this even as a time as he was growing older. And it's a beautiful reflection and includes some very, very key elements, which obviously one of them is the elderly in sacred scripture. So he goes on to talk about the fact that, for example, Abraham and Moses, they never received their mission in life until they were in their old age. So when somebody says to me, you know, they're old, and I'll tell a story about that, I always say, well, what about those figures in sacred scripture? And then in the New Testament, for example, you know, Joseph and Mary present Jesus in the temple for the presentation, and there's, you know, the old man Simeon and the older widow Anna. So scripture is full of references with older people. It's a very beautiful thing. And of course, I often joke personally, you know, from Leviticus, rise in the presence of one with gray hair. And I say, well, I don't have gray hair. I have white hair at this point. But honor the person of the old, of the elderly. And so in that regard, I think, you know, we take our cue, if you will, for the positive understanding, respect for, and homage, ultimately, for those who are elderly or growing older. It's, you know, one of the things in the Book of Wisdom, of course, and even this past Sunday when we had the readings, it spoke about wisdom, and we know that it's not uncommon, even for people not of faith, perhaps, to recognize the wisdom of the elders, and many cultures obviously proclaim that and revere that kind of wisdom, the wisdom born of experience. Mm-hmm. So I certainly think that we have we have to be very mindful that we have something to learn from the elderly. And Pope John Paul, and in that letter that he wrote, he says that honoring older people involves a threefold duty: welcoming them, helping them, and making good use of their qualities. And I think it's so significant, and it shows such respect for them as persons, because no matter how, you know, frail or unable even to function in a way that the world would see as useful, we don't see utilitarian consciousness as something which is the only reason why somebody has a value. We see that value in their human person, no matter what they can, quote, do or not do physically. Mm-hmm. I know that was a roundabout way of answering that question.
You mentioned hair color. Let's talk about hair color for a moment.
So mine is white, not gray. It's been that color for a long time.
I'm struck how hair color changes based on culture over time and what that might say about the way we view or value aging. So in our present culture, it's not uncommon for people to dye their gray or their white hair, right? And sometimes we might think that that's the way it always has been, always will be, so on and so forth. But even going back, you mentioned sacred scripture and thousands of years ago and honoring those that have gray hair. Going back to our founding fathers, four out of the first five presidents actually wore powdered wigs to look older than they actually were, right?
Yes.
And it wasn't just men. It wasn't just in the United States. There's a portrait of Marie Antoinette, Queen of France at the time, 13 years old, wearing a powdered wig as well to try to look older than she was, because wealth and wisdom were associated with looking older. Mm-hmm. With some, you know, kind of dyeing their hair now, certainly don't want to alienate people unnecessarily. I'm just thinking that maybe we're focusing too much on dying and not enough on living and embracing who we are today and what we can do today. Any thoughts on that?
I guess in some societal sense, there was an idea that there was the hiding on one level today, the hiding of aging. Mm-hmm. But interesting, as you point out, these historic references that people were actually making themselves look older in order that they would perhaps receive greater respect or dignity based upon their appearance. Mm-hmm. So certainly for us as people of faith, you know, we have to go well beyond appearance, mm-hmm. and we have the respect for the person or the individual. So in the end, it doesn't matter the color of someone's skin or the color of their hair, but what matters is the person themselves. And whether that person is, you know, 20 or 50 or 80, I think it's significant. I think the other thing, Justin, is this question of, well, what is old? You know, what does old age, or what does old mean? You know, there's in Italian, there's a phrase, the terza età, the third age, which is after a certain age, you know, into sort of like your dotage or your older life. And it's very significant to me that there are people who would say, you know, the best is yet to come, and, you know, I've not really reached maturity yet, and they're already in their 60s. But I recall some visits as a young priest because, of course, in a parish, there's a great care that's given to anyone, for example, who is homebound, and in particular, the elderly homebound. So those who can no longer come to Mass, those who, for one reason or another, are physically, you know, disabled. And I remember going, and it's a true story, I was just recounting this the other day. I arrived at the first house, and the man answered the door, and he was complaining and saying, "No, now, Father, don't get old. You know, it's not good to get old." And I said, "Well, I don't have a choice." And I said, "Well, how old are you?" And he said, "Well, I'm 78. And I said, "Now, that's not old." I went to the next house, and there was a woman, and she was saying, as I went in to visit, she said, "Oh, don't get old." She said, "Look what happens when you get old." And I said, "How old are you?" She said, "Oh, I'm 82. I said, "Now, you're not old." So we chatted. The third house was a couple who were terribly frail. And when we sat to chat, the man said, "Oh, look at us. It's not, you know, it's no fun to get old." And I said, "Well, how old are you?" And he said, "I'm 94. My wife is 93. I said, "You're old." Of course, we hear these phrases like old is a state of mind and all the rest. But I'm convinced that aging is a matter of, you know, just as the Pope says here, you know, welcoming and respecting, and then encouraging the gifts of the individual. So even if a person, you know, was a great, you know, tennis star, if they can't play tennis anymore, maybe they can talk to young people about, you know, helping them to learn tennis. Or even if they're very, very compromised, we believe that there is still a great gift of grace within the person out of the Lord's creation, because they're created in the dignity and in the image and likeness of God. So that, you know, understanding of the person, I think, gives a very different perspective, well beyond, you know, well, what's the color of their hair?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a saying that I think there's some truth to, that old age is 15 years older than I am, right? That's this moving target as we go through life.
Isn't that interesting? I know I joke oftentimes in grade schools, and you have little children. Mm-hmm. Little children, of course, what is old to a little child is completely different than what we would see as old. And I always say, for little children, old is anyone 5 years older than they are. So I recently know a priest who the kindergartners, they said, how old is father? And one of the kindergartners says, well, we are five. He must be about 15. And of course, when they asked his age, he was in his 60s, and this boggled their mind. Yeah.
I have a five-year-old son, Scott, who is, he would say 5 3/4, who is so looking forward to turning 6, and that's about all he talks about. I'm wondering, at what point in life does that change, that we stop looking forward to that next birthday, and why is that?
Well, I think there's something, I think there's something humanly about the age. I say up to a certain age, you want to look older, act older, seem more mature. And then once that age hits, you want to look younger, act younger, and seem more youthful. And frankly, I think that's around the age of 21, because so and I think, you know, recently, in going back to the hair color comments, I recall vividly when my mother turned 70, she had dyed her hair all her life. And when she got to about 70, she had an open conversation with my dad and us. And she said, you know, I think I'm just going to stop coloring my hair. Well, we actually had photographs of the transition over a month of her going into her white hair. When she went for the first time after the color was out to the hairdresser, the woman next to her said to the hairdresser, oh, could you put whatever rinse that is in Mrs. Thomas's hair? I'd like to have beautiful white hair like that. And the hairdresser said, that's just her natural hair color. So it's an interesting thing, because I think part of that, frankly, is simply an acceptance of who we are. Mm-hmm. And it's an acceptance that we are growing old. And even if someone is growing old, you know, to accept that aches and pains and maybe a little forgetful memory, all of these things are things which come with age, but they're not compromising to our humanity in any way.
Mm-hmm. I was talking to a Protestant pastor recently who had been retired for a year now, and he was talking about how that transition for him initially was very difficult, that he had really, without recognizing it, become a human doing, right, where he was really valuing who he is and his identity on what he did, or maybe his positional power. And when he was in the early months of his retirement, he really struggled with an identity crisis. You know, know that I'm no longer doing those things. Now that I no longer have that positional power, who am I? What am I to do? Do I have something to look forward to, you know, each day, so on and so forth? Any thoughts you have on, you know, what that whole human doing versus just realize we're human beings? Statement. I know I only experience that when it comes to vacation. Sometimes it'll take me a day or two to kind of decompress and
sure.
Just be. Any thoughts you have on that?
I think I'd stay for a moment with that pastor friend of yours, because in the end, all persons in a ministerial position, I think, live with the temptation in serving in ministry. They live with the temptation of allowing the doing to overshadow the being. And, you know, that's a conversation that certainly has been had in both secular and the religious world for you know, a number of decades. I think the key, of course, is to realize that we are who we are and how we are created and valued by the Lord in our relationship with the Lord, which is completely outside of what we may or may not physically accomplish. So we are loved not because of what we do, but because of who we are. And it's who we are as created as children of the Father and in the image and likeness that he created us. So I think it's our temptation and our weakness, so to speak, that permits us to always be on a gerbil wheel of work and accomplishing things, whereas simply being is part of who we are. And, you know, as we age too, I think out loud, Justin, you know, we were talking about cultures. Having lived in Italy for so many years, I had the blessing of meeting so many folks, sadly, unlike the United States, where for one reason or another, we have so many more elderly in nursing homes and in institutional facilities. In many cultures, and Italy is one of them still, where there is still the serious effort, if it is physically possible for the family, and I'm not in any way, you know, suggesting otherwise for families that they have no other choice but to do that, but that these families try to keep their elderly in the family home and often succeed at great risk to themselves, perhaps, but they really make that effort. So it shows the value, and frankly, the children grow up with the example of valuing and respecting the elderly. And then the socialization and the gift of them being with family, I think, prolongs their longevity oftentimes. And I had that example with my own dear parents, because my mother only lasted a month after her massive stroke, but my father had to go in a nursing home, and his socialization came principally from his involvement and his willingness to be involved. I would love to have been able to keep him, you know, in my own home, but that was not possible because it was not a reality. I was not married and with a family, and it was not possible for my brother. So I understand why that sometimes, because in his own physical condition, he could not live on his own. So I do think there's something to be said about those cultures which honor, value, and at sometimes great sacrifice, are able to keep the elderly in their homes, which is an advantage, a deep spiritual advantage and human advantage for the family members as well as for the elderly persons themselves.
When we talk about care for those age 60 and better, you've made a distinction that's been beneficial to me about the difference between a work ethic and a ministry ethic. When we kind of compare and contrast maybe a secular perspective on caring for older adults and maybe more of a faith-filled approach to caring for older adults, can you talk a little bit about that contrast or that comparison between those two?
Sure. I guess I'd first start, and I don't mean to keep leaning on my experience in Italy, but there's a great phrase that the Italians say, "We work to live. Others live to work." And I think that's a careful distinction. I do believe, given our society, I think, especially in the United States, there is a tendency to want to live to work. Whereas in Italy, the idea is they work, but that work is simply to allow them to live and to live fruitful, vibrant, you know, enjoyable lives. I'm sure that I know, of course, some would accuse me of being a workaholic, but I think it's so important not to miss the living. Now, certainly, you know, Pope John Paul himself, he was asked by someone one time, "Well, Holy Father, you have to slow down. I mean, you just have to stop working so hard. You know, you're going to kill yourself." And he looked at them and he said, "There will be plenty of time for rest in heaven." So I know that, you know, some of the great saints and so many exemplars of our faith were tireless in their work for the gospel and in their expressions in that regard. But you look even again at scripture, and these were figures who were on fire with the faith, on fire with the gifts and grace of the Holy Spirit, and they were committed to evangelization, proclaiming the gospel, and living lives of virtue. So I think it's a difficult road, because one would have to examine oneself. Mm-hmm. And I think that all comes down to perhaps a difficult background, and that may be the case that someone might be experiencing negativity. It might be the case of their own family upbringing, which may have been very difficult. But I think our task is to help them, literally to be family to them, and in such a way to give them the dignity they deserve and help them to see that their life still has purpose and value. And that, I'm sure, is a part of your work significantly.
When we're talking about work, and especially with older adults in mind, I'm struck by a couple of statistics that are concerning. One is that 50% of older adults are forced out of long-time jobs, and 90% of them never get a job that pays anywhere near that same amount again. And the second is that 75% of older adults view age discrimination as a barrier to getting a job. I'm saddened by how our community, our culture is missing out on those potential contributions by older adults that they can bring to the table with their experience, their passions, their mm-hmm. interests, so on and so forth, and are instead kind of left to be on the sidelines, at least of the workforce, because of those factors. So in many ways, I'm viewing older adults maybe as our country's and our community's greatest natural resource that is largely untapped. Any thoughts you have on that?
Sure. I think if I could, just from our perspective, and as Catholics in the Diocese of Toledo, we have elderly religious consecrated women, and we have older priests who are already retired, but they have not given up the work, if you will, mm-hmm. of service, of apostolate, and of ministry. So I'll give you an example. You know, some of the consecrated women religious, it may be that they can no longer, you know, teach in a grade school or in a religious education area. It may be that they can no longer work in social services and Catholic charities. But given their own physical limitations, their new work becomes the intensity of their prayer and their presence for the rest of the diocese. Likewise, we have several retired priests who, even as they age and are becoming elderly, they continue to desire to offer Mass and care for the faithful by offering spiritual care in that way. And both are a tremendous treasure to our diocese. So certainly I think our society needs to learn, and I like the terminology that you used, untapped resources, because not only are they untapped for their wisdom and experience and you know, the gifts that they've received all their lives that they can share with others, but imagine, you know, tapping that expertise in a way that, you know, maybe they're consultors, you know, to folks, or even if they're employed part-time, you know, in a setting. I can share with you, we have someone in our own pastoral center who actually will be one of the next interviewees for Graceful Living magazine, which we publish as a diocese. And she had a very challenging situation caring for her husband, who was very ill, and then after his death. And now she is so concentrated on giving back and the gifts, and she's so vibrant. You know, every year she's doing something different. So one year she was learning archery, and the next year, you know, she's taking cooking lessons, and this kind of vibrancy just makes you so, I mean, she's inspiring to me, mm-hmm. you know? So I think we can't miss that folks of an older age can also serve as a great inspiration to us. And that's where I think we have to say, if there is a tendency in secular society and in business, so to speak, that anything older than 50, it has, you know, little value, well, that's because there's workaholism. And I think to re-examine that reality is to say, no, every human life, no matter the age, has great gifted value. And how can we tap into that resource and learn from that ourselves and benefit from it as a society?
You mentioned Graceful Living, the beautiful publication by the Diocese of Toledo, focused on the readership primarily of those individuals in the third stage of life.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about why that specific outreach to the older individuals in the Diocese of Toledo, and why you feel that's important?
Sure. From the time I arrived, one of the things that was very clear was we had a diocesan newspaper called the Catholic Chronicle. And it became very evident it was only published once a month for about 9 months out of the year. And sadly, given the expense and the cost, it was simply not possible to move forward with it. Also because, frankly, there wasn't a lot of news, because in a world of instantaneous social media, there really wasn't a lot of news in it. And when I would ask people, I would ask a number of folks, and it was our faithful elderly and older folks, they were the ones disappointed, because they were the ones, you know, who liked a physical newspaper to look at and learn about what was going on in the diocese. And when I pressed a number of them, well, what do you miss about the Catholic Chronicle? The common response I would get is the obituaries. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that is not a reason to publish a newspaper. And it's fine to have evergreen stories, but we need to find a new way to do that. So, you know, with consultation and with great recommendations, we looked at various magazines that are produced in other dioceses. One, for example, is Faith Magazine, that's produced monthly. And we decided that while we couldn't afford that, we could afford to do our own magazine with in-house staff. And that the idea would be to keep a view to, in particular, those older folks who perhaps didn't have the opportunity to learn about the diocese. Maybe they don't have all the means of social media. They don't have iPads and cell phones, although a lot of older people do have those now. And that was the initial perspective on how can we reach out to them, provide something for them in hand that is both attractive and inspiring, and also showing examples of, you know, older folks who are living deeply rich lives and who allow their deep faith to inspire those lives. So I think of a number of them, you know, an older deacon who was a swim coach, mm-hmm. and elderly teachers who have been there for decades and decades and are still working. I think of one of the most recent, when I had the gift of fulfilling a bucket list item and going up in a hot air balloon. And it was an older woman who was celebrating 25 years as a balloonist. So you think of these things, and the point of the magazine in large part was to connect our elderly who don't have those other means to the diocese, and also to serve as an inspiration for them by giving some examples of older folks who are living, by God's grace, vibrant lives.
Yeah, some amazing positive images of aging in that publication. Thank you for that.
Sure.
Let's turn our focus more toward later life and suffering. You had mentioned how sometimes individuals later in life might have a serious health condition or crisis. Here I'm thinking of my aunt who had a diagnosis of ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease or something similar to that later in life. And we all, of course, never know what it's like in somebody's interior life. My perception was that she was approaching that disease and that experience through a very secular kind of perspective. And toward the end of life, I think there was some hopelessness there, and she ended up stopped eating and drinking as a way of shortening her life. How might that same experience or that same kind of diagnosis be approached differently through the eyes of faith?
So obviously, again, with the principle that all life has value, that all life is sacred, because, again, womb to tomb, whether it is a baby in the womb or a severely compromised elderly person, still that person's life has value in the eyes of God and is sacred to the Lord. So that's, if you will, our perspective stance on every life. You know, it is certainly, we understand that there are very, very serious questions and difficult realities that people face regarding illness. So, you know, one of the things that, you know, Pope John Paul says actually in this document that I've been talking about, the Letter to the Elderly, but also in his, you know, extraordinary document, Evangelium Vitae, the Gospel of Life, where he speaks about there's no question that, you know, the church would never impose, you know, keeping a person alive, you know, at all lengths. But the church is very, very clear that she certainly wants to respect, in particular, if there's someone so physically frail that any kind of effort to assist them, you know, would be compromising and painful. That is certainly appreciated. But denying, intentionally denying, you know, nutrition or hydration, intentionally denying, you know, a medicine that may assist someone, then those things obviously can border or even move into euthanasia, which we believe is intrinsically evil, because that means it's the intentional taking of a life. We know very well that so many people now die in very beautiful hospice care, but that's not the intentional taking of a life. That's the understanding that there is a natural end to life and that no extraordinary means need to be taken to save that person's life. So from a perspective of faith, we're very mindful of their physical condition, all the more mindful of their spiritual condition and care for them, and certainly mindful that any intentional taking of life we could never support or encourage, because that would simply not be within our moral perspective based on Jesus, his teaching, and the gospel.
Bishop Thomas, so there might be some listening today who maybe went to church regularly earlier in life, you know, took their faith a little bit more seriously, and maybe now might find themselves in a position of feeling like they lost their faith or feeling like they've neglected their spiritual life. Any message that you think is important for them to hear?
Sure. I think just based on your comments, I'm sure there are folks listening or watching that might be in that situation. I would simply offer a very warm and prayerful, "We miss you, we need you, and we would love to have you home with us." And also to invite them to the power and the strength of the Holy Eucharist. You know, I've heard a number of older people who, for one reason or another, principally out of fear, especially after COVID, the COVID crisis, they simply, for one reason or another, had fallen away and they did not come back to church, or they chose not to come back to church. And I would invite those folks to literally come back home, because in the end, you know, it's one thing to watch Mass on television, but Mass is not meant to be encountered on television. And if one can't come to church on their own, I can tell you my own parents got to the frailty where members, all of our parishes are like this. There are teams of people that will pick up the elderly who can still travel and bring them to the church for Mass and then take them home again. So there are all manner of possibilities to assist our elderly. And I would say also a thing that we always say, it is never too late to return to the Lord. And Jesus is waiting in the Eucharist. And in this time, you know, we in the United States, we've been for a number of years in the midst of a national Eucharistic revival. And part of that revival is that all of us, no matter our age or state in life, would be really concentrating on growing in deepening our love for, our understanding of, and our living out of the Eucharist. And I can tell you, there's a number, for example, a number of elderly from some of our parishes who go to some of our Helping Hands of St. Louis, for example, and they do these charitable outworks as much as they can. What a gift and an expression of their faith, which is literally an outpouring or a showing of the faith that they have, obviously, in Jesus and in the Holy Eucharist. So they're being fed on Sunday by, you know, the Lord of life with his body and blood, and then they're going out to feed the hungry and feed the poor and assist the needy. What a witness and an example for all of us. And a number of these are older folks.
Absolutely. You're coming up on your 10th anniversary of installation as Bishop of the Diocese of Toledo. Any kind of parting remarks for the listeners on what that experience has been like and any remaining thoughts on this topic of aging through the lens of faith?
Thank you. Well, thank you for remembering that it's coming up on the 10th anniversary. And I'm so grateful for the gift of the Lord. I think I mentioned to you before we went on air that I'm focusing all of this in a way of saying 10 years of unmerited grace. And I can say that despite any difficulty or challenge, and there have been not a few, with the joy of so many wonderful, positive, grace-filled events, and there have been not a few, with all of the sacraments and the faithful, it sometimes feels like it's been 10 minutes, and other times it feels like 100 years. But the gift of grace is that he is the one who has sustained those 10 years. My dear dad used to say that the captain is only as good as the crew of his ship. So I'm only as good as all the people who have been so generous around me, the very, very faithful and dedicated priests, deacons, consecrated religious, and scores of lay faithful, all the staffs of our parishes and schools. The diocese is only as good as the staff around me, and what a blessing that has been for me. And I would say, you know, in reflection, you know, I think back also on a line of Pope Francis when he first arrived, and I've quoted him a number of times. You know, he always has these pithy phrases that can be really rather striking. And he said that we should all be concentrating on taking the elderly as our roots and the young as our wings. And I thought, what a tremendous phrase, because it's a great balance that we would want to keep rooted in those who have gone before us and honor their lives, their wisdom, respect them with love and encouragement, and by the same token, be able to be lifted up and allow the young to be our wings to go forward. So I think it's a beautiful little phrase that helps me to recognize, I hope, you know, as we move into the future, into the next 10 years, so to speak, that we can continue to have the elderly as our roots and the young as our wings. And, you know, the day that I was announced, Justin, as the new Bishop of Toledo 10 years ago, my staff encouraged me. We had the idea to do what I did that day on my anniversary this year. So in fact, on that day, on the 22nd of October, I'll be making visits to representative groups from the diocese just as a sign of the outreach that this is what's on my heart as a bishop and all the Catholic lay faithful. So it's a visit. It will be Mass, but principally with school children. So at Catholic education in general, and our young people. And then I'll visit university students. I'll have a visit with the elderly frail in a nursing home. I'll have a visit with our consecrated religious. I'll have a visit to La Posada with the poor and families who find themselves in trouble for housing. And then in the evening, a visit with the College of Consultors, who are my closest priest counselors. So it's just a symbolic way of reaching out to everyone. And as part of that, very intentionally, are the elderly and the infirm and the ill.
Bishop Thomas, I'm honored that you spent this time with me today, and I'm deeply grateful for the wisdom you've shared with our listeners today. Just thank you for all that you're doing to help individuals with living better and longer. And listeners, we're deeply grateful for you tuning in today as well. Thank you, Bishop Thomas.
Justin, thank you so much. And just a word of encouragement and prayerful support for everyone, all the viewers and listeners, but in a very special way, those who you are called in your office for aging to care for, no matter their faith, their culture, and to offer encouragement, support, and prayers for you and your staff, and for all of those dear people who we want to lift up in the grace of the respect for the dignity and sanctity of their rich lives.
Thank you, Bishop Thomas.
Thank you so much, Justin.
And thank you, listeners. Please tune in next time where we will learn more about living better and longer. Thank you.